Good evening.
Good evening, Hanok.
Good evening, Malta. How are you?
Good, thank you. How's the weather over in Georgia?
There was some thunderstorms today, and it's raining a lot all week.
Yeah. We're still getting a little effects. The winds over here, the rain has stopped, but we still have a little bit of wind.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So we're starting a new section. No, we're not. We're doing the advanced reincarnation. I'm sorry. So please join me in saying the Anapakoa. Anapakoa Gedula Chiminsa Pati Serura Alapagimo Yitak Sadi Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Nora Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun Nagibor Dorshe Yehudha Kivavat Shamrem Mengimogalot Mukhtav Shin Barhem Tacharem Rahame Sitkatha Tamid Gamlem Betet Reish Saditav Gimel Chasin Kadosh Berov Tuvcha Nael Adata Et Kufbet Tet Nunayan Yachrid Ge'er Lamcha Penei Zokre Kedushata Yudgimalamed Hezayan Kuf. The letters of the month of Sivan, the Resh that created the planet Kohav, the planet Mercury, and the Zion that created the constellation Tehumim, the twins, the astrological sign of Gemini. Together, the Resh and the Zion have a gematria of 207. Together, the two letters, Resh and Zion, spell the Hebrew word Raz, which means secret. Shabbatenu Kabel Ushma Tziyakatenu Yodea Talumot Shinkufav Tanyutav. We've brought the energy of creation into our space. Now we will separate between the right column energy and the left column energy utilizing the 13 attributes of mercy. Adonai Yohe Wahe, Adonai Yohe Wahe, El Rachum V'chanun, Erech Apayim, V'rav Chesed V'emet, Notzer Chesed L'alafim, Notzer Avon Wafesha, V'chata'av V'nakei. Now we're going to connect to the year of the goat, the year 5777. There are two verses that connect to this energy, and the first that we study is Lamentations chapter 3, verse 52. And we'll start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud kudsha barichu ishkin te bitzilu urchimu tchilu tchilu urchimu le'akta l'shem yud he'bav he'. V'yehudah shalim b'shem kol Yisrael limud Torah mitzvah la'asot Torah mitzvah v'ayhino am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'asei adenu konanei aleinu ma'asei adenu konanehu. Sod aduni katzipor o yevai chinam. When we take the first letters of these five words, we're able to permute them into three Hebrew words, tzatz, ki, ach, which translates as appear like brothers. And when we take the final letters, they can be permutated into dir yam, which translates as sea of tenants. The second verse comes from Joshua chapter 23, verse 8. That connects to the year of the goat. And this verse takes the name of the year, Tafshin Ayin Zion, and conceals it in the verse, separating each letter of the name of the year by seven other letters. Kim ba Adonai Yohewahe Eloheichem tadibaku kasher asitem ad hayom hazeh. Now the next year, the year of the pause, the year 5776, also has two verses that connect to that energy. The first one is from 2 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 34. Raka kohanim ha'yulimat willo yachlu lehafshit et kol ha'olot vayehaskum achechem ha'levim ad kelotam lacha yad yitkadshu ha'kohanim. Ki ha'levim yishrei levav lehitkadesh me'akohanim. This verse has 25 words. When we take the first letter of each word, we're able to permute it into eight names of God. Adonai yohe wahe la la he wa 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 Yo la yo ala me hey 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 ata reka. The second verse that connects to the year of the pause is Isaiah chapter 26 verse 4. Bihu ba Adonai yo he wa he ade ad ki biya. Yo hey Adonai, yo hey wahe, tzur olamim. The year 5775 has the energy of swallowing death forever. There are three verses that connect to this energy. The first that we study is Job chapter 7, verse 19. Kama lo tishem imeni. Lo tarpeni ad bili ruki. Next, we'll study 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 23. Uru udu mikol hamachavo iyam. Asher yitchabe sham wishavtem elai el nachon. Wechalachti itchem. Wechayim yeshno varetz vehipasti oto b'kol alfei Yehuda. And the third verse is also from Job. It's chapter 20, verse 7. Tegel olanetzach yoved roav yom ruayom. Then the year 5774 that has the energy of peace in the Middle East. There's only one verse that connects to this energy. It's 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 10. Usam timakom leamili Israel untati wishakan tahta vilo yirgaz. Od v'lo yosifu, v'nei avla la'anoto, ka'asher barishona. Now I'm going to read and study the verse from Yitro, the Zohar on Yitro, Pasuk 29, that has the energy of certainty. Rabbi Abba Amar, Tika matar tane nan tiku chabarihu koma diaved leila witata kola ihu kishot theobada ikshot velelach mila bialma divae barnash vadach yaleya. Mine yaulan haga beya kalana teakulu ovada dikshot inun wikola itstirich bi alma. Now we're going to scan the 72 names of God and want to scan the first seven rows of the 72 names of God. The eighth row will say the name, and the ninth row will scan. The eighth row. Nu me me yo yo la e re he me tsa re wa me be yo he he anu wa me he yo. And scan the last row. And the 72 names from the Tzaddikim. Please scan the first seven rows. The eighth row. Nu ko me yo re la he be he me za re. Wahe beyo ahe alawa mezayo. And scan the last row. The Tzaddikim who left this day, the 29th day of Sivan, there are none who specifically chose this day that we are aware of. But there are a number of people, Tzaddikim, who passed when we don't know their dates, and this is a good day to mention those dates. Rabbi Yechiel Ashkenazi, Shlomo HaKohen Rabinovich, and Brurier bat Rabbi Hananinya ben Teradion. And the wife and the two sons of Rabbi Avraham Elimelech Pirlo of Stolen Karlin, and he is the son of Rabbi Israel. And the eighth verse of the Ana B'Koach, we say in a whisper. And today's advanced reincarnation, you can find that on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, row 11, the second column from the left. When you open up the Advanced Reincarnation landing page, you open up to Class 9B, which will open at Chapter 7, Verse 10, or Section 10. And this is where we left off last week. It's Chapter 7, Section 10, that's titled Dangers Faced by David. I just want to confirm, did we study this last week, or am I correct? I'll assume I'm correct. Although his nephesh was intact, King David was in danger of losing his portion in the resurrection of the dead as a result of his sin with Bathsheba. Actually, I'm not correct. I remember reading this last week.
Oh, Hanok?
Yes.
I have this on Chapter 9, the introduction. Because I have stopped here on 6:15:17, which was last week. It's the floating towers.
Have we done Chapter 8?
Well, I think so, because I took that with me. Yes, I have a check by it. And I have 6:15. We started there, Chapter 8, Section 1. And I used a handout I have in my hand. There was only one section for 8, it looks like. My page 5 is Chapter 9, and I have stopped here on 6:15:17, which you made the comment, I'm overwhelmed by the depth and beauty into the above paragraph.
Okay.
There's so much depending upon me. Yeah.
So let me get to that page and tell you which class it is. Chapter 10, you said?
No, Chapter 9. It says Chapter 9, Section Introduction, Floating Towers, Introduction to Chapter 9. The HTM page is 15.
There, I see it. And now I know where I had gone wrong. You find the handout as class. Let me double check that. It's class 9. But you have to scroll down. My mistake. It's class 10. But you have to scroll down to where it says Floating Towers, Introduction to Chapter 9. Chapter 9 involves one of the 400 questions that Doeg and Achitophel asked concerning the tower floating in the air. The sources for this extraordinary image of the tower floating in the air are in the Talmud and the Zohar. In the Talmud, in Chagiga, the number of questions asked by Doeg and Achitophel is 300. In Talmud Sanhedrin, two numbers, there are 300 and 400, are both recorded. In the Zohar, the number of questions is 400. And that is the number that the Arizal favors. My commentary. These 300 or 400 questions are an aspect of tradition and are teachings of Kabbalah about which it is said that these questions posed by Doeg and Achitophel cannot and will not be answered until the Mashiach comes. This is related to the metaphorical teachings that there are 32 sparks of wisdom that cannot be elevated out of the Klipot until the Mashiach comes and defeats Satan. These questions are impossible to discern the answers using logic. They can only be answered by the intuition of the Mashiach. This paradox is difficult for people searching for truth to accept. Remember that 400 is a number relating to completion and ultimately to perfection. 300 is a number relating to passion and growing the vessel. These concepts will be answered or hinted at below. The following is the text of the Talmud in Chagiga. Samuel found Rabbi Yehuda leaning against the doorpost and weeping. He said to him, "Keen scholar, why are you crying?" And he replied, Is it a small matter what is written concerning the rabbis? Where is he who counted? Where is he who weighed? Where is he that counted the towers? Where is he who counted refers to scholars who counted all the letters in the Torah. Where is he who weighed refers to those who weighed the laws of the Torah to determine which are heavy and which are light. Where is he that counted the towers alludes to those that taught 300 laws concerning a tower floating in the air. Erudition to obscure and confound. My commentary. There is a part of the Zohar referred to as Nehilan. This is translated as a commentary on the obscure. This part of the Zohar is extremely esoteric. It is dealing with subjects that relate to these 400 questions that have not yet been purified, and therefore answering them brings the negative system into contact with the pure system. The laws of spiritual purity and defilement are the most difficult, obscure, and esoteric in all of Jewish law. One of the main sections of this category is taught in the Mishnah Ochalot, and it is one of the most difficult and one of the most obscure. Indeed, in these days, century after the destruction of the temple, nearly all of these laws are no longer practiced, and the scholars who are proficient in them are few. Mishnah Ochalot, chapter 4, teaches about a tower standing in the air. It refers to a tower, a small portable closet resting on thin legs, standing outside under the roof of the sky, as opposed to a tower located within another building. Nevertheless, according to Rashi, the leading commentator of the Talmud and the Bible, and based upon his supreme authority, the tower standing in the air is none other than our tower floating in the air. Rashi does provide another alternative interpretation, but it is hardly less esoteric than the one that will be discussed here. According to the alternative interpretation, the tower floating in the air refers to the top of the Hebrew letter Lamed, which protrudes like a tower above all of the other letters. Doeg and Atichoch Achitofel desire to disclose esoteric secrets for selfish and impure reasons. When does its contents remain undefiled in opposition to the environment surrounding it? If it contains something defiled, under what circumstances does it defile the surrounding environment? These are some of the questions concerning this section of the Mishnah Ochalot. In brief, those that taught 300 laws concerning a tower floating in the air refers to those that were proficient in a very difficult section of Jewish law. It is a section that was also obscure and esoteric, even in the days of the Talmud, even in the days of King David. These scholars were few and great, and Rabbi Yehuda was crying over their disappearance. Rabbi Ami said 300 questions were asked by Doeg and Achitofel concerning a tower floating in the air. In the Talmud Sanhedrin, this teaching is also stated in the name of Rabbi Ami, but the number of questions recorded there is 400. These questions were asked by Doeg and Achitofel, who have in common, in addition to their keen intellects, implacable enmity to King David, the prototype of Mashiach. They were not motivated by this pursuit of truth. Rather, they desired to confound and obscure, to disclose esoteric secrets for selfish and impure reasons, and especially to use their erudition as a weapon against David, the Mashiach king. Asking these 400 questions, or these 300 laws, concerning a tower floating in the air, they are, so to speak, the devil quoting scripture. This view is supported by the text in the Talmud Sanhedrin. Rabbi Ami said 400 questions were asked by Doeg and Achitofel concerning a tower floating in the air, and none of them were answered. Rabba said, is it such a great thing to ask questions? In the years of Rabbi Yehuda, they only studied the laws of damages. Rashi explains there that God wants the service of the heart and not impure erudition. Rabba's statement is intended to disparage the greatness of men like Doeg and Achitofel, who use their sharp minds in such a negative way. To ask 400 confounding questions, in contrast, in the generation of Rabbi Yehuda, the esoteric laws of spiritual defilement were not even studied, but only the straightforward practical laws of damages. Spiritual defilement entering the line of King David. Furthermore, in the Mishnah Ochalot, that begins with the tower that is standing in the air. The main theme is the rule that spiritual defilement goes out, but it doesn't go in. Thus, if there is something defiled inside the tower, then its influence will go out under certain circumstances to defile objects in the environment around the tower. However, the impurity is outside. It will not enter into the tower to defile objects that are within it. Doeg and Achitofel wanted to provide otherwise, and in the same way claim that something entered into the Gilgul, the reincarnation of King David, or his forebears, that made him ineligible for the kingship. It was far from outlandish to suppose that there really was something seriously wrong in the line of King David. Come and see who his antecedents were. From the side of his ancestress Ruth, the Moabite woman, there was the incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughters, which is just about the lowest of the low, as well as the law that prohibits Moabites from converting into the congregation of Israel. His father's line was also full of problems. First, there was Er and Onan, Judah and Tamar, and afterwards came the story of Elimelech and Naomi, their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, and the strange Levirate marriage of Boaz and Ruth. These difficulties, by the way, are some of the subject matter dealt with by the Saba in Zohar Mishpatim, which is the section that will be briefly introduced in this introduction. Moreover, mystery and doubt surrounded the birth of David. His father Jesse had separated from his wife after the birth of their seventh son. How did she come to be pregnant once again? And according to her, impregnated by her husband, who didn't remember a thing. Finally, the incident of David with Bathsheba belongs in this category as well, since it also served as a prominent argument for those who wanted to derail the Davidic dynasty. In addition, there is another interpretation of the tower floating in the air, that it refers to the erected male sexual organ. In this case, the questions of Doeg and Achitofel refer to the complicated and questionable sexual history of the Davidic line, as outlined here. The purpose of their questions, accordingly, is the same as what has been explained. According to Doeg and Achitofel, something entered into the reincarnation of King David or his forebears that made him ineligible for kingship. Who were Doeg and Achitofel? Doeg, in addition to being the head of the Sanhedrin, the ancient court and legislature of Israel, also commanded the special police of King Saul. In that capacity, he pursued David relentlessly. And of all the advisors of King Saul, he was the most insistent that David had to be eliminated. When David appeared out of obscurity to kill Goliath, King Saul began to inquire after his identity and the lineage of his family. Doeg answered, "Before you inquire about the lineage of this family, inquire whether they are even allowed to be members of the congregation. Since one of the matriarchs of the family is Ruth, the Moabite woman, according to Doeg, the Edomite, her ancestors are not even allowed to be part of the Jewish people. In this way, he wanted to banish David from any position of leadership, despite the fact that permission for a Moabite woman, as opposed to a man, to enter the congregation had already been decided by several courts before his time. Achitophel was the wisest of all counselors in the generation of King David. Had Absalom, King David's son, followed the advice of Achitophel when he rebelled against his father, then David's cause would have been lost and the king would have been killed. Indeed, it may be that the entire rebellion was the design of Achitophel, and Absalom was just a helpless dupe against a force like that. Many divisions of soldiers fighting for Absalom did not threaten David as much as Achitophel, joining the ranks of the rebellion. For this reason, David prayed special prayers, and he sent special secret agents to infiltrate the ranks of Absalom's counselors for the specific purpose of frustrating the advice of Achitophel. It is not insignificant that King David is the prototype of Mashiach, and these two, Doeg and Achitophel, with their great minds and keen perceptions, were the most implacable and most dangerous of his enemies. Typical of secret agents working behind the lines with these questions, they wanted to confound and confuse, hoping in that way to cast doubts upon the legitimacy of the Davidic dynasty. Furthermore, they wanted to uncover the secret weakness in the root of King David's soul, a defilement or impurity in his reincarnation, or in the Gilgulim of his forebears. In this way, they hoped to gain the power to stop the redemption. Floating in the air with nothing to rest upon. There is another possible interpretation to the 400 questions of Doeg and Achitophel on the tower floating in the air. Mishnah Nedarim makes the following statement. The annulment of vows are floating in the air, and they do not have anything to anchor them. In other words, the body of law concerning the authority of the court to annul vows does not have any scriptural source to rest upon, and it is not anchored in any scriptural source, although it has become established law. It floats in the air. King Solomon, the wisest of all men, answered all of the 400 questions. The decision to allow a Moabite woman to convert and enter the congregation may be comparable. The scriptural source for this ruling is questionable. It was established on the authority of the oral Torah. The courts of Boaz and Samuel, the prophet, ruled accordingly, and it was finally established once again by the Sanhedrin in the time of King David. Doeg and Achitophel asked 400 questions in the attempt to nullify this ruling. Although their logic was impeccable and could not be disproved until the time of Solomon, King David's son, the courts consistently ruled against them because there was a tradition that took precedence over their logic. And that too is a tower floating in the air. My commentary. What is this all about? Why is it important? Let us put it in perspective. Doeg and Achitophel hate King David. So what? This is a battle between the two kings, Satan and Hashem. The tool of Satan is logic. The tool of Hashem is both logic and tradition and intuition. Which should one follow? In the Western world, with Western education, logic is the tool. If one cannot prove something logically, if one cannot measure something physically, then it is not important and of no consequence. The majority rules. This means that a minority of one is meaningless in this world. This is not the halakha and the teachings of the Torah. This subject is too long to answer at this point. In brief, Torah teaches majority of knowledgeable people rule. Why were these 400 questions not answered in King Solomon? It is to teach us the meaning of hatred in the frame of reincarnation. A spark of a soul is captured by another soul. Doeg and Achitophel accuse King David of having something negative within his Gilgul. This is the spark of their soul captured by King David. This is the cause of their hatred, and the study of this approach is how to handle removing hatred from the world. The identification of the tower floating in the air has many metaphors. From an erect penis to the essence of purity, to the essence of Malchut, which is purity, surrounded by impurity. Light surrounded by the klipot. There is much more to comment upon about this floating tower, yet it requires a vessel to reveal the light, and that takes questions. The Saba enters the place of 400 questions. As mentioned previously, the number of difficulties and questions raised by Doeg and Achitophel, according to the Zohar, is not 3, but 400. The Holy Zohar also asks that King David's son, King Solomon, the wisest of all men, answered all of them. Furthermore, in the Zohar, the Saba of Mishpatim also asks and answers some of them, or at least one of them. In the middle of this section, it is stated explicitly that the Saba has entered into the palace of the 400 questions. Some of the text then that records it will follow. Indeed, it may be that the entire text of the Saba in Zohar Mishpatim from the beginning is really part of the 400 questions. See the riddle of the Saba. I will put a link to a series of Zohar translations and commentaries from the section of the Zohar dealing with the Parasha of Mishpatim. Right now, I am not sure if we should do this as a separate class or include it at this point. What is your thoughts on the matter? However, before we can translate and explain the explicit text, we must first recall something that was learned previously. There is a phenomena called the spirit that is left within the woman. As a result of the first intimate relationship with her husband. This spirit remains within her at all times. However, what happens when her first husband dies? She remarries, and the spirit of her second husband enters within her. This is one of the 400 questions. My commentary. The halakha of the black widow comes from this idea of the conflict in the womb between those, or these reshimot, the impressions of the first husband and the second husband, and also possibly the third husband. Say your thing, Saba. The Holy King is here. Come and see how high are the awesome and mighty things the Holy King does. Who can speak about them? His spirit is flopping around within her womb like a snake, and it quarrels with the other spirit of the second husband that has entered. When the second husband comes and puts his spirit into this vessel, the first spirit quarrels with this spirit that has entered, and they cannot settle down together. For this reason, the woman does not settle down properly with her second husband. The first spirit knocks around within her. She always remembers him, and she cries and grieves for him, because his spirit is flopping around within her womb like a snake. And it quarrels with the other spirit of the second husband that has entered. If this spirit that has entered pushes out the first one, then the first one goes its way. Sometimes the first one pushes out the second and quarrels with it until it takes it out from the world. And that is why we have learned that a man should not marry a woman who has had two husbands die on her, because the angel of death is strong within her. People do not realize that it is this spirit of the first husband that has conquered the other spirit of the second husband, and that is why nobody should get mixed up with her. If the spirit of the first husband is strong enough to conquer and push out the second spirit, and consequently the second husband dies as well, then it is not advisable for any third man to marry her. It is likely that what has happened to the second husband will happen to the third as well. Therefore, tradition suggests that a man should not marry a woman who has had two husbands die on her, unless special banishing meditations are performed. However, if the second spirit that has entered overpowers and conquers the first one, then the first spirit goes out from there and goes on its way. To where does it go and what happens to it? O Saba, Saba, he says to himself, what have you done? You thought you would say a few words and get out of this. But now you have entered a place that no one else has entered since the day that Doeg and Achitophel made those difficulties. They asked 400 questions concerning the tower floating in the air, but no one could answer any of them until King Solomon came along and clarified each one of them exactly. Saba, Saba, will you reveal this supernal secret that was hidden? What have you done? Saba, Saba, you should have watched yourself in the first place. But now, Saba, is not the time to hide out. Get your courage back. Where does that spirit that leaves her go? And he began to cry. The spirit that goes out from her on its way wanders through the world, and it is not known. It goes to the grave of that man, the first husband, from where it came, and from there it wanders about the world. It appears to people in dreams who see in their dreams an image of that man. Thus it wanders in the world and constantly visits that grave, until the time when the soul, the spirits, visit the graves of bodies. The second spirit, the soul spirit, is a part of the soul of the person who is dead, in this case, the first husband. The time when the spirits of the soul visit the graves of the bodies is, for example, on the day of the Yahrzeit, or the yearly anniversary of the day when the person died. it is customary that descendants and students visit the graves of the departed on the Yahrzeit day and to pray there because it is a time when their prayers can receive assistance and power from the spirits of the departed ones. As such a propitious time, the spirit that was left within the woman by the first husband and has gone out from her to wander in the world meets the spirit of the soul of the first husband from where it has come. This spirit joins with its main spirit, which clothes itself within it. The wandering spirit joins the main spirit of the soul that has come down to the grave. The former, the wandering spirit, becomes an exterior addendum to the latter until the soul spirit returns to its place. When it, the main spirit, goes into its place, it divests itself of it, the wandering spirit. But there is a place for it among the palaces of paradise, or just outside of them, and there the spirit shelters, each one according to its ways. When the spirit visits this world, when those that have died are needed among the living, then they ensconce within these spirits. There are times of trouble when the living need the assistance of the spirits of the deceased. In other words, there are times of trouble when the living need the assistance of the spirits of the deceased, and in such times the spirits of the deceased are able to communicate with the world of the living through the interface of these minor spirits that have been sheltering among the palaces of paradise or just outside of them. Accordingly, it would seem that there is a happy ending to this story. The spirit drawn from the first husband that was left within the woman, which was banished as a consequence of her second marriage, and made to wander through the world, has become the interface, enabling communication between the spirits of the souls with the world of the living. However, the Saba rejects this contention. Perhaps you will say that it has been an advantage to the spirit and this woman has benefited everyone. It is not so. If she did not marry another one, and if the first spirit had not been pushed out from before the other, then it would have had a different advantage, and it would not have had to wander in the world as it did. And it was not necessary for the living of this world that it should wander as it did here and there. Rabbi Shia and Rabbi Yossi challenged the Saba's supposition on this issue with the following question. If that is the case, then the second union of this woman was not a good thing. But you said that the rule is that one man is pushed out by another man. The Saba himself taught us a rule that applies to these matters. One spirit is pushed out by another. Therefore, it is quite natural that the first spirit should be pushed out from before the second. It is not a calamity, and it should not be looked at in a negative way. Nothing. Now one of them will ask him another, stronger and more compelling question. And I say, maybe the second husband that married this woman is really her soulmate, and the first one was not her real soulmate. The second belongs to her, and when the time came, the first one was pushed out from before him. Therefore, Saba, pushing out the first spirit, was not only natural, it was also just. And the Saba answers, it is certainly that way. The first spirit that was in this woman is never pushed out unless the second is her soulmate. And in all the cases where the second is pushed out from before the first ones, it is the first ones that are the soulmates and not the others. That is why they cannot abide together. And the second spirit is pushed out from before the first one. Consequently, it is said about someone who marries a widow that he doesn't know his soul. He doesn't know what he is doing because the net is spread for no reason. He does not know if she is his soulmate or not. My commentary. We do have other tools today to know if someone is a cosmic soulmate to a particular woman. Although this wisdom is never 100% certain to the fifth sign of soulmates, as taught by the Arizal. The Saba now introduces an entirely new possibility that coincides with his own preference in these matters. One husband and no more. There is a widow who does not remarry. Even if her soulmate comes along, but she does not want to remarry, God does not coerce her with force. He prepares another woman for the man, and he does not enter into harsh judgment with this one in this world, even if she never has any children. Because a woman is not commanded to be fruitful and multiply, as is known. Thus, even if her first husband, who has died, was not her soulmate, and the second potential husband is her soulmate, the Saba nevertheless prefers that the woman refrain from marrying. Ibum. There is one major instance where the Saba will agree that a woman should remarry after the death of her first husband. And the Torah just about obligates it as well. It is the case of the Yibum, the Levirate marriage, where the first husband has died without leaving any progeny in the world. The brother of the deceased first husband, the woman's brother-in-law, is designated by the Torah to marry the widow. This act of Yibum will liberate the spirit that was left within her by the first intimate relationship with her first husband and build living progeny in the name of the deceased. Now, the foundations of the Davidic dynasty are the Yibum of Tamar by Judah and the Yibum of Ruth by Boaz. Both these relationships were questionable and susceptible to the challenges of Doeg and Achitophel. They are the tower floating in the air. Judah was not the brother-in-law of Tamar, but her father-in-law. Ruth was a Moabite woman, and her legitimate entry into the congregation was questionable, let alone that she should become the mother of the royal house. Furthermore, even if her marriage to Mahlon, the son of Elimelech, was legitimate, Boaz was not his brother, but his father's cousin. And what kind of Yibum is that? The spirit that was left within the woman by her first husband may well have been flopping around within Tamar and Ruth, but did these unorthodox types of Yibum free those spirits and build them up? Could these relationships build the foundation of the genealogy of the kings of Israel and the Messiah? Around these issues, Doeg and Achitophel ask 400 confounding questions, such as what happens to the spirit of the first husband. These are the 400 questions of Doeg and Achitophel on the tower floating in the air. The discussion of the points touched upon here goes on and on in the inimitable way of the Zohar and the Saba. Obviously, the Saba was quite reluctant to reveal these things. For us, it is not so much of a problem, since we do not understand too much of the Zohar anyway. But now the Holy Ari comes and tells us that he too will be revealing one of the 400 questions. In chapter 9 is one of the 400 questions that Doeg and Achitophel asked concerning the tower floating in the air. Like the Saba, the subject of chapter 9 will be illicit sexual relationships, in particular that of homosexuality, how they affect Gilgulim, and how the sparks that fell into the Klipot because of the sin are ultimately redeemed. And here is where we will stop, and we will pick this up next week to continue this section from the Zohar. Does anyone have any questions? At 7 o'clock, we will have a Zohar class. I hope you'll join us. Shalom to all.
Shalom.
And I remind you, Saturday night.
Shalom.
The 7 o'clock Saturday night is our Rosh Chodesh connection. So please join us then as well. Shalom.
Okay. Shalom. Thank you.